So, the Snakes are going back to the World Series after Game 7. What a ride. We're going to break down the key moments of the series against the Phillies. We're going to talk about the key players. And, of course, we're downing some of that hot tea while we're at it. This, of course, is the T-Backs Podcast, Arizona's number one baseball and beverage podcast. I'm your ever faithful host, Benji. You can find me at GB Diamondback on X. And, of course, don't forget to subscribe or follow the podcast wherever you're listening. Anyway, on with our traditional podcast brew. Today, I'm drinking a cup of basic black tea with a little honey since it's a bit chilly here in London at the moment. But speaking of cold, how about the ice-cold icon named Brandon Fart this postseason? In Game 3 and Game 7 against the Phillies, we're going to talk about their attitude, their big occasion, because they really stepped up. I think a lot of people would look at our big three in pitching. They'd look at Gallen and Kelly and Fart and say, Fart's probably the weakest out of those three. But this postseason, especially in this season's series against the Phillies, they have really stepped up. And let's remember, they are still a rookie here, but they've posted a 2.45 postseason ERA. They have 22 postseason strikeouts. That's the third all-time for the D-backs behind, of course, Curt Schilling and the big unit himself. And they've got a long way to go before they get to the kind of numbers that those guys were posting in terms of the 60s of postseason strikeouts. But what a random turnaround. He's always had it in his locker. And we've never really seen him tested in a big occasion like this before. And nobody really knew how they were going to perform. But at no point did Brandon Fart look like he was going to let this game get away from himself. I said to my soon-to-be mother-in-law, who's a Giants fan, before the game, that one of the keys to the win in Game 3 over in Philly would be taking the crowd away, get right on top of the Phillies' batters, make sure their big hitters aren't going to try and get those big swings. And in Game 3, he got pulled before he faced the lineup for a third time. But in Game 7, anything I said about Game 3 just becomes doubly important. Because, man, losing Game 6 clearly created something of an issue with the Phillies fans. I was sat in a bar in London called Passyunk Avenue in Battersea, which is a Philly-themed sports bar with Phillies fans in it. And watching at kind of the bottom of the 7th, start of the 8th, you could see the fans leaving the stadium as the D-backs were beating the Phillies in Game 6. So in game seven, they were going to be out for revenge. They were going to be out for blood. And part of Brandon Fart's job was obviously going to be kind of holding on to that, taking the crowd away from it again, making sure that nothing like that really could let that pressure get to him. And wow, the big occasion, he stepped up big time. So I think I touch on this point quite a lot in terms of the D-backs needing to add a pitcher to the rotation who's really one of those big game, big moment guys. Like, if you look at their opposite number for the Phillies, Ranger Suarez, who played in Game 3 and Game 6 and 7, that's the kind of guy we need, who really elite-level pitcher who you can always call upon, but he's never going to be, like, the biggest star in a lineup pitching or hitting, but somebody who you know is actually really, really got some of that quality to him. And I think Brandon Fart has definitely cemented the kind of that title as like one of the elite pitchers now. We'll see how he plays next year. Obviously, he's still a D-backs player for the foreseeable future, but we'll see how he gets on next year in the regular season. I guarantee he'll likely maybe have a couple rocky starts and we'll go, well, what happened to the Brandon Fart from the postseason of 2023? But because he's clearly got something special in his locker when he's up for a game. And I think if you D-backs have finally found a pitcher who's there for the biggest moments, he could end up being our number one guy. Like, Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly are both really talented pitchers, but they can kind of cruise through games, and they can cruise especially through middle difficulty games, not exactly like the hardest lineups all the time. And they're both guys who got kind of accused of throwing kind of batting practice fastballs in some of the games at the Phillies hitters like Schwarber and Turner, they really, really crushed on some of those fastballs. You just gave them kind of an easy height right in the middle of the zone, and we got punished for it. But Brandon Fott barely gives anything away like that, or barely gave anything away like that in his games against the Phillies. So I think hanging on to him for the foreseeable future, try and build your pitching tactics the same way we've tried to build our hitting tactics around some of our young blood has been impressive. And I think he might not be one of the biggest stars of the game, but he's got a bright future ahead of him. I'm not saying he's going to be kind of Cy Young contender immediately starting next season, but he's got some talent. But even if he turns into a bit of a flop after a couple of good performances, you got to consider that actually the D-backs pitching situation is really okay. Like, you look at our bullpen support in game 6 and game 7, and it was absolutely phenomenal. The likes of Johnson, Sol Frank, and the big power arm of Ginkle were all really impressive to a championship level, seemingly out of nowhere when you consider that what kind of reputations they had at the start of the season. And the person I'd like to call out the most on, I've got a couple of points I'm going to touch on, but the person I'd like to call the most out on is Andrew Sol Frank. And he really impressed me against the Phillies. He seemed to have a lot more nuts than the Phillies guys had. And I saw somebody over on Twitter or X who was saying that the Phillies didn't have enough nuts on them to beat the D-backs. And I think if you consider where all those nuts went, and I think it was actually Andrew Sol Frank. Like, here is a guy who comes into the game and he issues two walks against his first two batters. One of them is Kyle Schwarber, solely with the intention of going up against Bryce Harper and Trey Turner, as the who are go-ahead runs with Schwarber on base. And that, to me, is crazy. But Andrew Sol Frank has got a really bright future ahead of him. I think he's kind of destined as a reliever. I don't see him as being one of the starting guys. He's not got that endurance and that stamina that you'd need to convert him from a reliever to a starter, but he's got the talent there. I think his only real issue as a reliever is with his control. And in game 7, only 3 of 17 of his pitches were in the strike zone, but he was more than effective enough. And he brings up the ninth inning, and then how elite is Sewald? Here's a guy, a veteran pitcher, brought in specifically to be a big game, big moment guy to get those results stamped, sealed, and delivered. And this postseason, he's pitched 9 ninth innings. The whole way through, he's pitched 7 9 innings this postseason. And his stats in that, he's got 11 strikes with no runs allowed. And in tight games like we've seen all the way through the D-backs Phillies series, where like giving up a run, giving up 2 runs in the ninth inning would see it get walked off, and as it was with Cattell getting our first franchise walk-off since the famous World Series victory with Gonzo's walk-off. I think you gotta say Sewald is making the difference, and I think that's both in the quality of his pitching, and clearly he's still an elite closer, and if I were the Seattle fans, I wouldn't be quite certain as to why they let him go. I've seen some opinions and some discourse online of the fact that Sewald got traded was the reason that the Mariners didn't make the postseason. I'm not sure that's really entirely true, that the Mariners haven't backed up their good pitching levels really with run support all year, kind of like the D-backs in kind of that middle season slump. But I don't think that the Sewald trade is the reason they didn't make the postseason. But I do feel for Seattle. Paul Sewald was very much part of the heart and soul of their clubhouse. And he's now making dad speeches as like a proud father taking the D-backs into the World Series. He got the win jacket after Game 7 in Philly. And I think it was more than deserved. And most of the opinions I've seen online have been Seattle Mariners fans wishing him well. So a lot of them clearly hoping that he gets a ring, and he's also a character that thoroughly deserves it. He's taken on one of the mantles of this new D-backs philosophy. If the D-backs are going to bring in a veteran, it's going to be someone who's still got a bit of legs in them, or a bit of arm in this case, who's going to try and actually bring some character and energy to the clubhouse rather than picking up a paycheck and closing out their career in a comfortable, warm environment. But I think if the D-backs do go on and get the ring, and we'll talk about their chances of doing that later on in the podcast, if the D-backs do go on and get a ring, I think Sewald's very much going to be an important part of that. But that great five-man bullpen that we currently have, which, let's not forget, includes a 2022 All-Star in Joe Manaply. Like, he's got less headlines, but he's put up a zero in Game 7, just like all of the other relievers in the D-backs bullpen. And that's a lot for a guy who people were really questioning, does he have what it takes to be an elite level relief pitcher? I think in 2022, being an all-star for the D-backs wasn't exactly a hard prospect to achieve. It's obviously a far cry from Lourdes Gurriel Jr., Zach Gallen, Corbin Carroll, and Geraldo Perdomo all being finalists on the all-star ballot this year. And I think you look at the likes of Christian Walker and Gabby Moreno, who are both really, really unlucky to have not made the All-Star game this year. And you got to say, wow, what a turnaround between 2022 and 2023. But that's just one half of the game. Like, our pitching has really improved. And I think some of the nerves, not all of them, but I think some of the nerves have improved from that awful slump in the middle of the season. Like, you're looking at losses against the Rockies and you're thinking, wow, really? But that's no disrespect to the Rockies. They've got some good players. But the likes of Marsh, who is at the Phillies now instead of the Rockies, you've got to look at them and say, yeah, we are capable of standing up to teams that basically assemble the best position players from other smaller teams in the league. The D-backs are capable of standing up to that. You're capable of taking on the Dodgers. You're capable of looking at how much money the Padres are spending and saying, no, we're going to do it differently. And I think that's worked. The idea of assembling young talent for the D-backs is really paying off. And I'm really glad that we're starting to mold a lineup around our young talent. And speaking of young talent, we've got some truly special players starting to shine at bat. And the first shout out has to go to Ketel Marte, who has become the record holder with the longest consecutive postseason hitting streak. He's now at 17 games consecutive hits in the postseason, which is honestly kind of incredible. Like, you think about how long the MLB has been going for, and you think about the kind of talent that you have to achieve something like that. And it's a testament to how hard Ketel works. He's one of these guys that you see a lot of Marte jerseys and you think, yeah, one of the big selling points of this D-backs team is how Ketel plays. And he's obviously one of our best players, but he's not a guy that you hear that much about beyond what they do and the fact that they do the basics really, really well. You don't see people wandering around in Ketel Marte shirts the same you see people wandering about like Mike Trout jerseys, for example. But some of the opinions I saw especially after that Game 7 where Marte was awarded MVP for the entire NLCS, and I think it's actually not a bad statement to say he could go on to be one of the greatest, if not the greatest, Diamondback ever. Like, he's got time left on his contract. He's popular. He's happy where he is. He's clearly got that mojo with where he's playing and how he's playing kind of in his corner to help him kind of chug along and get everything right. So I don't think it's a bad shout and it's a bad moment to say Ketel Marte is going to be probably our best player ever. But he's not one of the only guys doing it. He kind of carried the team on his back for a while until everybody else got caught up with it. I think now we're really starting to see, and Game 7 very much showed, that Corbin Carroll is somebody who's finally figured out how to play postseason baseball. And his interview after the game was saying he was just sticking to doing what he knows how to do. We'd seen in games 1 through 6 against the Phillies, Corbin was very, very anonymous, very quiet. Didn't get on base that much, didn't try and run that much when he was on base. And he'd not really recorded too many significant hits. I think he actually only recorded 1 or 2 hits throughout the first start of the series. And for somebody who's pretty much got Rookie of the Year nailed down and for a while was in with a shout of being division MVP up alongside the likes of Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts, Corbin Carroll is really, really starting to wake up. And I think it was fair to say they were the best player on the field last night, especially in terms of the outfields at the very least. And he focused on the basics. He focused on his fundamentals. He stuck to his guns. And he drove in 2 runs on 3 hits, which was crucial in the end. It wasn't exactly the winning runs, given the margin that the D-backs went on to win by. But it was desperately important, because you can't always rely on the other people around him in the order. You can't always wait for Tommy Pham to hit a solo home. You can't always rely on Lourdes Gurriel Jr. to have a good night. And these are talented players, but they're not always going to stand up and perform in 7 games out of 7. And we've seen that actually they maybe did struggle a bit in the games against the Phillies as the series got started. And we went 2-0 down in Philly and thought, oh, well, we're going to get swept here. But, you know, the D-backs got the bats woken back up again, and that made the difference. And then the third element of our game, our athleticism, our running game, it's finally back. Corbin had 2 stolen bases alone, but the D-backs have clearly learned from what I'd say is pretty beginner stuff when you're looking at how to run the bases. You're not stranding men on base. You're trying to make the defense work harder. And it works on the Phillies. There were some significant errors, especially in Game 6, that we snuck in there, just to make them think, ah, damn, if only I'd got that catch, or if only I'd got that throw a bit better. And you look at the comparison between how the catcher for the Phillies was playing and then how Gabby Moreno could really kind of laser focus to catch people stealing. And that's been the D-backs' strength all year. And we need to remember that that's something we are good at and keep trying it, because who knows how it could go against the Rangers, who will be facing in the World Series now. The question really becomes now, can it work? Can we play the same way we want to all year? Can we make the Rangers mess up? Can we make them give us stuff early? And I think there are pitchers in that rotation. There are players in that rotation who really can get jumped on quickly and early in the games. So, but they really have kind of a golden glove level defense when they're on their day. Like Adolis Garcia seems to have pretty much almost single-handedly dismantled the Astros, and he'll probably have something to say about it if the D-backs are going to try and play that open, fast, aggressive baseball. However, I think the Rangers are beatable. I'm not going to go out and immediately say the D-backs are going to win the World Series, but I think we have as much of a chance as the Rangers do at this point. Like, the Rangers can be inconsistent like we are. I know they're a divisional series winner, and we're not. They came top of their little bundle of teams, whereas the D-backs finished second to the Dodgers. But it's both wildcard teams, and that I think everyone would agree with me that saying this was not the World Series everybody was expecting to have. But not so long ago, it was only 2 years ago, both of these teams lost over 100 games. And for baseball, I think it's a fantastic thing to say, hey, look, these teams won their games and they got to the World Series. It's a great thing for the sport that teams are capable of rebuilding and making solid progress and getting the results right. And you are seeing those results now with the fact that this is the World Series matchup. And I think that's a thing that's good for baseball because it shows somewhat of the viability of the sporting model. Because if it was, let's say, the Yankees and the Braves as the World Series every year, you'd get sick of it really quickly. And I don't think people want to see that. People would say, oh yeah, we're going to go and see Aaron Judge and we're going to go and see Ronald Acuna Jr. play in the World Series. And that would sell tickets because these are some of the best names in baseball. But I don't think that people would accept that every year. Like, when I was growing up as a boy in England, and it was a period of dominance in the football or the soccer, as Americans would say, and Manchester United would always win. They would always win. And it was a great team. And obviously the hard work from their manager, Sir Alex Ferguson, was what kind of made that happen. But they never sold out all the time, regardless of how good they were. They never sold out all the time. And then in 2008, my team, Portsmouth, which is not a team at Manchester United's level, so it's got a prestigious history and a great history of being a very proud football club. But 2008, they were in the FA Cup final against Cardiff City, and that record of attendance at the new Wembley Stadium in London has never been broken. Because these are teams who find it special to be in those kind of scenarios. And do we really want to try and get rid of that? There's a lot of people complaining about the format of the playoffs, especially this year, having eliminated the big teams, made it too hard for the big teams to get to the World Series. But my two cents on this is this. If the big teams were good enough, they would be in the World Series. They'd be in the Fall Classic. I don't think it's fair on teams who have great players like the D-backs and the Rangers to say they've only got so far because of the playoffs making it that way. No, it's quite simple. The Rangers and the D-backs are in the World Series because they won when it mattered. They came up and they played better baseball. And they played better baseball having played more games than the teams they ended up facing. If you're going to complain of fatigue, it's nonsense. Like, the Rangers had to beat the Rays to get where they are in their first game, which I think is a harder matchup than the D-backs having to play the Brewers. And the Rangers beat the Rays, who've been so impressive all year. And then they had to take on the Astros, and the Astros really will make anything a fight. And I'm not going to comment on kind of the beef going on between the Rangers and the Astros, just like I'm not going to comment on some of the actions of Philly fans, both in Philly and in Arizona during that series. It's really quite simple. The D-backs are a team that deserve to be there, as are the Rangers. And I genuinely hope for the D-backs. I think they can win it. I'm not going to put my farm on it. I'm not going to bet the house. But I think the D-backs have enough to at least make it an interesting series. If in a week and a bit from now, we're looking at the D-backs have lost three in a row coming into the series at Chase Field, I'll be a little quieter. But there's potential there. And I think that's the kind of positive note I would like to leave it on, that this D-backs team has talent. This D-backs team has energy. They're starting to get their confidence back. They're starting to get their mojo back. And ultimately, they have made the entire Valley area and their wider fan base, especially like the international guys like me who don't get to go to as many games as some people might, watch them as live as often, because usually games for me are starting at 1 or 2 in the morning. This D-backs team has made people proud. And not just because of the way they play or the fact that they win, but because they have spirit and pride in who they are and their uniform, and the way they play is exciting. Because people want to see exciting baseball, but people want to see baseball players who put on, I was going to say who put on the purple and teal, but it's not, and I wish it was, but who put on that uniform, whether it be the one stamped with the black and red and gold A, or with the Serpientes script on it in the sand beige color. This is a team that cares about what they are doing, who's really this year has forged a connection with the people they are representing. And I don't think that's to be underrated. When the D-backs were chasing for the lead of their series, chasing the Dodgers and the Giants, who had a bit of a postseason revival as well towards the end of the year, people were commenting that you saw a lot more D-backs merch and you saw a lot more D-backs pride out in the wild in the Valley area. And being a place that's got so many transplants from other places and so many people who are there but not all year round like myself, for that to stick and for that to make that impression is not to be underrated for a team that really was regarded as a bit of a laughingstock when you consider they're one of the newer franchises. They've got a couple of good moments, but you didn't see them really going anywhere. You didn't see the progression. And now to be in the World Series, I think it's a testament to the work of the GM, Mike Hazen. But I think you really have to give the credit both to Torrey Lovallo for sticking to what they want to do and sticking to a plan. And you've seen that with them pulling pitches earlier than they would in the regular season, all through the playoffs. But also sticking to a plan of giving people who have had the fans on top of them a chance. Like, I didn't see too much of why Tommy Pham was so much of a spectacular, hyped pickup. And he goes in and drives a single homer out of nowhere against the Phillies. And you think, oh, actually, you know, I'm sure I'm glad it's this guy as opposed to somebody else. And I think Evan Longoria, everyone maybe thought, oh, he's going to Arizona to retire. But him and Sewald, both big veterans of the game, are starting to carry that persistent energy of, no, we're still here, and we're supported by these younger guys around us. And we saw Paul Sewald in a video kind of screaming into a phone with Alec Thomas on D-back socials earlier today. You think, there's a lot left to give from these guys, and they deserve to be in the position that they're in this year. And I think if some of them stick around for next year, they'll be contributing. And I think if they don't stick around for next year, then there's roles in the organization for them to help us bring through the likes of Corbin Carroll, the likes of Alec Thomas, and people like Drew Jones as well. All these fantastic young prospects. John Lawler is another one. We have these young prospects who need this mentoring, and I think we have to keep the players that we have in to mentor them, because this is the first time ever since I started following baseball that I've seen a D-backs team really forge a connection with the people of the Valley, the people they represent. And the Rally the Valley slogan, I think, is one that's overused around the Arizona teams. But this year, I think, for the first time, we have a team that we actually can rally around, who know we're rallying around them, and who will give you the performance and give you the rewards and payback that I think really a lot of the most passionate D-backs fans really deserve after weathering a lot of crap from pretty much the entire MLB for several years. So we'll see how the World Series goes. And of course, I'll be back to give you all the analysis and all of my opinions afterwards. But I would just like to say thank you very much for listening. Remember to drop a follow. Go follow me over on X. It's GB_Diamondback. Follow us at the T-Backed Podcast on whatever platform you listen to. And we'll see you in the next episode. Go D-backs.